I'm very pleased that I'm joined. I'll do a sort of left to right, which is we've got with us James Ball from the garbage BuzzFeed.
That's failing pile of garbage.
Failing pile of garbage BuzzFeed. James also worked previously at The Guardian. I'm sure even more beloved by Donald Trump. And indeed briefly at WikiLeaks. Got Anne McElvoy from The Economist. Over on the right, he put himself there deliberately, is Alex Sundstrom from Republicans Overseas. And I'm going to kick off with a, I don't think I can use the word veteran, but well, experienced political commentator from The Independent, John Rentel. John, would you like to kick us off with some of your thoughts, picking up on Brian and so on?
Well, thank you very much, Charlie. Yes, I'm probably the oldest person in the room, and if in doubt, always start by agreeing with the chair. So I like to say how much I agree with Charlie that post-truth is probably a rather unhelpful term. I mean, I know that's what you've all come to hear about, and I'm going to say that it's the wrong term, but I think it implies that somehow there was a golden age. You know, in about 1996 or something, when, you know, journalists were all completely honest and politicians told the truth and everything. But you don't have to know much about political history in this country or anywhere else to know that it's, politics has always been a low game. We all learnt at school. I mean, I was obviously there at the time when the Zinoviev letter was forged in 1923. That might have swayed the result of a general election. I mean, that was a very significant forgery. It was known, it wasn't known to be a forgery until afterwards. But there were people up to no good interfering with democratic elections then, and have been ever since. my hero Tony Blair. Accused the Conservatives. I mean, this is when you all liked him, by the way, in the 97 election, when he could walk on water. He accused the Conservatives of wanting to abolish the state pension. It was a disgraceful lie, because it was on the basis of someone called Peter Lilly, who's now widely forgotten. He was actually going to be the next Prime Minister at one point. He was Social Security Secretary at the time, and he'd floated the idea of moving from paying pensions out of government revenues to a funded scheme. I mean, God knows how you would fund pensions for everyone, but he'd floated that idea, and the Labour Party decided to suggest that meant the Tories wanted to abolish the state pension. It was a disgraceful lie, but nobody minded because everybody loved Tony Blair at the time, so. And as Charlie said, the Brexit campaign was also dominated by what I would prefer to call statements which weren't soundly based in fact, such as the absolutely infamous now £350 a week that we send to Brussels, which we don't, which Dominic Cummings, the director of the Vote Leave campaign, admitted recently in a very, very long blog, which I have read all 20,000 words of, just to save you the trouble. In the middle of there somewhere, he admits that they quite often used this 350 million figure deliberately in order to provoke the other side into complaining about it, knowing that it would attract a lot of attention. And the problem was for the Remain side of the campaign was that the truth is we send about £200 million a week to Brussels every week. So if you say, well, it's not 350 million, it's 200 million, then you're only drawing attention to the fact that we send a lot of money to the EU every week. And Dominic Cummings rubs his hands with glee and says, thank you very much for making my point. And the Remain campaign was not above a little bit of statistical statements which are not soundly based on fact. Put it this way, they put out a leaflet saying for every pound we send to Brussels we get £10 back. Well, I want to know where my £10 is. One person's alt fact is another person's lie. The question is, what do we do about it? How do we deal with this? And I'm very much on the side of disagreeing with the New York Times use of the word lie in a headline. I thought that was a complete abdication of the responsibilities of journalism, because I think once you start accusing people of lies, you've lost the argument. That applies to whether you're arguing with someone on Twitter or whether you're a media organisation describing what politicians are up to. Because in order to accuse someone of lying, you have, by definition, you have to be questioning their motives. You must be saying that they know that they are telling something untrue at the time they're saying it. And the problem with someone like Donald Trump is that, I mean, anyone who claims to be able to read Donald Trump's mind is not making a claim that's soundly based in fact, because Donald Trump plainly believes that he's going to build this wall. I mean, it doesn't matter. I mean, it's not about a wall. I mean, we all know that, you know, the amount of concrete and steel required to build this stupid thing is physically impossible. I mean, it's the equivalent of fighting a very large war somewhere. But it's not about a wall. It's about a statement of intent. It's about his identity as a defender of American values as he sees it. And so accusing him of lying is just sort of completely beside the point. So my argument is, whether you're arguing with someone or whether you're a journalist covering politics or any walk of life, just avoid the L word.
Just to puncture your... not complacency, but you work for a newspaper that interestingly described itself as a views paper. So you started this thing about everything's opinion. But also interestingly, you work for a newspaper which is not a newspaper anymore. It's now online, which reminds us that one thing that has changed from the halcyon Blair days from till now is that we are in this digital space where there are an incredible number of little John Rentals out there also commenting and producing sometimes hoax stories, but often just strange narratives and so on. So your audience has changed. Even if the politicians have always been, as Paxman put it, lying bastards, they're now able to operate in an environment where people aren't certain about who to trust. I mean, that has changed, hasn't it?
I'm not sure it has changed as much as you're implying there, Charlie, because I mean, I think actually what matters online are the big brands. People still trust the BBC, and that's very controversial with a lot of commercial interests. And people trust big names like the New York Times and the Washington Post. And increasingly, if BuzzFeed, BuzzFeed slightly undermined its reputation, I thought, by putting unverifiable information online and just saying, well, make up your own mind about it. But BuzzFeed does have something of a reputation, and you can build and defend a reputation online just as you can in print. I don't think there's any difference in principle on that.
But are they listening? Are they listening to...
Who's listening? Lots of people are reading The Independent, if that's what you're asking.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean, half of our audience is now American, which certainly has changed the way we approach journalism. Yeah. And it means we report much more on Donald Trump than we would have done if we had still been a printed newspaper.